We know that we have to take the best of each agency in how we address the needs, using our resources and skills to effectively tackle severe hunger at its roots by investing in resilient livelihoods, even within the midst of conflict and crises. This event is also part of our joint commitment on behalf of WFP and ourselves made earlier this year to keep you as our members up to date and informed of the progress being made in fighting famine in these four countries. In the four, the situation remains extremely dire, although we have seen some progress, in considerable progress, I think, in averting famine, thanks to a concerted mobilization of resources and the actions of the humanitarian community, including, of course, first responders at the country level as well as at the global level. At the same time, however, we acknowledge that there is a lot more to be done, and we have had significant progress, but we really have a lot. We cannot underestimate how much is left to be done to avert another famine declaration this year. In South Sudan, I know that the update will be given in more detail. While famine is being contained in the worst hit parts of Unity State, 45,000 people remain in famine conditions, and the number of people at risk of famine has risen from 1 million people in February to 1.7 million this month, last month in June. As you all know, the common denominator facing these four countries is protracted conflict. Conflict exacerbated by decades of chronic underinvestment in rural development, along with extreme climate events. Conflict pushes people from their land and prevents them from accessing markets for seeds and their produce. It prevents them from going to their fields to plant, to tend crops, take care of the animals, or to harvest. Conflict destroys food chain infrastructure, very difficult to rebuild and extremely difficult to overcome in terms of marketing, both in terms of inputs and in terms of sales, along with other things. The drought, like we've seen in Somalia and across the Horn of Africa, further undermines livelihoods and erodes families' capacities to cope with the next shock. Livelihoods are diminished or abandoned, and people see no alternative but to move and to move on to either urban areas or, in extreme cases, across borders in search of other opportunities. Consequently, livelihoods, we believe, are the people's best defense against hunger and catastrophe. If we can assist rural people to maintain their livelihoods, they will be able to defend themselves against the worst ravages of drought, and recovery will be both faster and cheaper. The negative impact of conflict on food insecurity, nutrition, and agriculture is very clear. In conflict-affected countries in crisis, rates of undernourishment are about three times higher than in non-conflict countries. The 2017 Global Report on Food Crises shows that out of the 13 main food crises, 10 of them are driven by conflict. However, even in the midst of conflict, agriculture livelihoods continue. They continue, of course, at a threatened or a diminished level, but they do continue, which is why FAO provides crucial livelihood support to protect livelihoods and facilitate food production in conflict-affected situations. Just to give a few examples, and I know Dominique will give more in his remarks, in northeastern Nigeria, for example, FAO is providing seeds and fertilizer to 1.1 million displaced and returning and hosting families. In South Sudan, more than 2.3 million people have already received support for the main planting season. We've provided more than 200,000 people also with emergency fishing and vegetable kits in Unity State as part of the UN-wide rapid response to avert famine. For these populations, often frequently displaced to swamplands and extremely remote areas because of the violence, these kits are lightweight and provide access to vital nutrition and food even when on the move. We know, quite simply, that saving livelihoods saves lives. Acknowledging that there is a huge difference between surviving and thriving, at the same time, as we seek to prevent famine and save lives, we are also looking to build resilience over the long term. This is necessary, it's efficient, and it's effective. FAO's humanitarian response is embedded, as you know, within a resilience framework that seeks to tackle the root causes of these food crises, helping families, communities, and governments prepare for, prevent, and respond to emergencies. Also, as many of you have been watching, the Secretary General has highlighted the need to prevent conflicts and sustain peace as part of the work of all of the UN agencies. We know that conflicts are often and very often at least partially driven by local issues, often around natural resources, which can play a decisive role in continued violence or in relapse into conflict. In our case, from FAO's side, interventions to contribute to preventing crisis, to preventing conflict and sustaining peace include our work in supporting agricultural livelihoods for the reintegration of ex-combatants that we've been doing in a number of countries, as well as addressing specific conflicts, for example, over land tenure access, natural resource management, and between pastoralists and farmers. A very interesting example now is the Abyei area between South Sudan and Sudan. Working with partners in the UN and civil society, FAO's provision of community-based animal health services and vaccinations to the Dinkin Gok and the Miseria communities has been a strong entry point for reestablishing intercommunity dialogue around land access and use, including signing a local peace agreement between the communities. This conflict prevention approach will be scaled up in a new 3-year, 27 million euro project funded by the EU, looking or addressing cross-border issues to strengthen livelihoods and resilience of pastoral and agro-pastoral communities in South Sudan, in the border areas with Sudan, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda. As I mentioned earlier, even as conflict and disasters go on, farmers continue to plant, herders continue to take care of their animals and maintain their herds. Families continue to fish, and the use that we often forget about of forest resources becomes increasingly important as source of food for those displaced and also for those in fear who are hiding, avoiding the conflict. Certainly we can't ignore these people, and agriculture cannot be an afterthought in our collective response. So, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, we know 2 years ago, 2015, we agreed, the international community and countries signed up for the Agenda 2030 and are committed to eliminating hunger and extreme poverty by 2030. Yet today, within the overall total of around 800 million people who are food insecure, 108 million are severely food insecure, with 30 million in these four countries. In addition to that, millions are on the edge of falling over the precipice into genuine disaster. an expression I know that Dominique has often used in discussion of imagining that we are in a helicopter looking at people going over the edge of a cliff. And often what our work has been is to either stop the people from going over the cliff or to rescue some that are about that have gone over and put them back up. But at the same time, behind the people falling off the edge or about to fall off the edge are a lot, millions more that are coming in that we need to prevent getting to that point. We have been successful so far through the efforts of WFP, ourselves and many others in stopping and averting famine, but we have an increasingly large number of people who are at risk. We simply can't continue like this. We have to address the longer-term issues. We have to pull people back from that cliff. It's the only way that we can achieve SDG 2, and it is what we need to do now. And I'm sure that the examples that we'll hear from the panelists will provide excellent insight into how to do that. With that, I'd like to hand over first to Luca Russo to brief us on the current situation.